Hey everybody, this is Mark, and this is an analysis and commentary on the post, Love is Not Enough. In these commentaries, I talk about the inspiration and ideas and research behind the post, so if you enjoy the post, you should listen to the audios, because the audios are awesome, and they teach you more. So with this post, the whole thing kind of started with the John Lennon-Trent Reznor juxtaposition. I've always had this secret fantasy, and who knows, maybe I will actually do it one day, but since I was in college, I've always dreamed of being a music writer, of writing about music. I consider music my first passion, the first art form that I really fell in love with. For many years of my life, I identified as a musician first and foremost, especially way more than writing, and I'm one of those people. I get really nerdy. I get into bands and I get really nerdy about, you know, the lyrics and the band members and the biographies of the singers and how that influences the music and stuff like that. So there's a lot of different groups or albums that I've kind of fantasized over the years about, like writing this 20-page essay about why this album is like so profound and important. I never have done anything like that, but who knows? Maybe one day I will. But anyway, Nine Inch Nails is actually one of my favorite groups of all time, and actually Trent Reznor is one of my favorite musicians of all time. So I have tons of respect for him. I'm a huge fan of him. I'm also a big fan of the Beatles, which I think any human being with blood coursing through their veins has to be. But I philosophically identify much more with Trent Reznor than John Lennon. And I was listening to this song. He has a song called Love Is Not Enough. And I was listening to it probably, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. And just the idea like really stuck in my head, especially once I really kind of dived into a lot of relationship coaching and coaching people through their relationship problems. This idea that love is not enough just kept making itself apparent over and over again. And if you look at the research behind relationship longevity, it's there too. If you look at a lot of the work that like John Gottman has done at the University of Washington, he comes to a number of kind of counterintuitive conclusions, in terms of like what type of couples stay together, which ones split up. And one of them that he found is actually that fighting is not a consistent amount of fighting, especially over the same problems, is not only normal, but it might even be beneficial. If you take relationships that just never fight or always avoid their problems or never deal with their problems because they want things to feel good all the time, it's usually those couples are the ones who run into more problems than the ones who are just kind of willing to be like, we've been having this fight for 10 years now. He never changes. I never change. But that's okay, because, you know, we're still together. We're still committed to each other. That's just one example that he comes up with. But, I mean, basically, a lot of his work has kind of shown that emotion's great, but it's not as important as a number of other things. There's also Helen Fisher is mentioned on the site a few times, but she's done a lot of work about the difference between, say, like romance and infatuation and on the one hand, and then commitment, life commitment on the other, and how they're very different things. They show up differently in the brain. People report the experiences very differently, and how this is important. It's important not to mix them up when judging the relationship. Because the problems that arise for most people is that they confuse the two. They confuse infatuation with lifelong commitment when they're completely different things, completely different experiences. They think that because I feel this strongly about somebody, then it must mean that I'm supposed to be with them forever and ever, when that's often not true at all. And then often there are times where you're supposed to be with somebody forever and ever, but you don't necessarily always feel very strongly for them. That's also a normal part of long-term committed relationships. And then finally, you have kind of classic attachment theory, which makes the argument that there are healthy forms of love and attachment to a person, and then there are unhealthy forms of love and attachment to a person. In fact, in many cases, love can be damaging. It can be both a result of emotional damage, and it can also be a cause of emotional damage. And so you see a lot of the most destructive relationships, it's two people who are already emotionally damaged individually who come together in kind of this dark synergy where they perpetuate their own traumas over and over again. So anyway, to get back to music and how I came up with the article, I mean, that's just a quick overview of a lot of the research, background research that goes into a lot of these ideas. And I really liked the love is not enough thing. You know, that idea started popping up to me over the years when dealing with people and their relationship problems. And at one point, I don't remember when, but it kind of struck me that it's a really interesting juxtaposition between that and John Lennon. And then both the people that Lennon was and Reznor actually is. So the perception of Reznor is that he's this dark, brooding guy with drug problems. And it turns out that he's actually like extremely professional, responsible husband and father. If you watch like videos, like they've done some behind the scenes videos about his tours and stuff like that. And all of the guys on his crew and in his band are like, he is the hardest working, no bullshit guy that like we've ever worked with. Like he is 100% on top of things, you know, always getting things done, always in charge. Whereas like Lennon, as much as he's kind of idealized, particularly by boomers, if you kind of dig into his personal life, it was a total mess. I mean, there's failed relationships everywhere, abandoning kids, alcohol abuse, drug abuse, physical abuse, and a lot of kind of like a lot of situations where his actions and words like really don't line up. So it turned, you know, another simple example is, you know, he was always talking about like peace and fairness and equality and how governments are exploiting people. And at the same time, he spent a lot of energy dodging taxes and, you know, hiding his money away and keeping a lot of it, that as much of it as he could. So he was a very complex man that painted a rosy picture for the public, but, you know, had a lot of, I guess you'd say, skeletons in his closet. And whereas Reznor, is very kind of open and upfront and comfortable with his skeletons, but it turns out that he's like a really solid, responsible dude. And I've always gravitated and been fascinated with the latter, with people like that. That's kind of how I aspire to be in my own life. So once that idea kind of struck me, I thought that was a really nice way to kind of illustrate how these kind of opposing philosophies, I believe, play out in people. I argue throughout the site that people who are always trying to keep things rosy and merry and happy, are usually the ones that have like the most shit falling apart behind the scenes. Whereas it's the people who are very comfortable exposing and being vulnerable to their flaws and their failings that are usually the most solid and grounded individuals. And this article actually started as a section in a very, very early version of my book, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. I'd say the first, the third of the article was the beginning of a section in that book. As time went on, that section got cut. Actually, I think what happened was I was living in South America, and for those of you who are Latino or who have lived in Latin America, you know that some of the cultural norms around relationships are, how should I put this politely, completely fucked up. like very unhealthy in terms of like drama and attachment and being overly invested in partners and things like that. And what I noticed over and over, I lived in Brazil for on and off for about 2.5 years, and then I lived in Colombia for a year. And what I noticed about all my Brazilian and Colombian friends who had relationship problems is that it's like they were willing to tolerate pretty much any sort of suffering or disrespect or poor treatment or destruction of their trust for no other reason than they were in love. And you see this some in the you know, the US and the European cultures, but down there it's the norm. It's kind of like, well, he cheats on you and spends your money and lied to you about something extremely important, but you love him, so it's okay. And that's in these cultures, like I'd say the majority of people, like that is just how life is to them. And so for me as an American, like that felt like a very intense exaggeration of a lot of the problems that happen in the US. Like a lot of the toxic relationships in the US are the same thing. It's like, well, she lies to me. She steals things from me. She says she treats me poorly in front of my friends, but I love her. So, you know, that's just how it's going to be, I guess. And I think it's this lack of self-respect in the face of love that allows these horrible, horrible relationships to perpetuate themselves. It's the fact that these people never learn how to stand up for themselves and assert themselves and be willing to let the love go, understanding that like just because you love somebody doesn't mean you should be with them, keeps them kind of imprisoned by it. It keeps them trapped by it. So what actually happened was the summer of 2014, a good friend of my wife, who had just gotten married, basically it was a situation, I describe it in the article, but it was a situation where it's like this guy was just, he's a deadbeat. Like he's just really selfish, entitled, treats her poorly, and she just goes along with it, thinking, hoping that he'll change one day, and basically tolerating it. And a couple things happened in that relationship that were a little bit shocking and horrifying. And both my wife and I encouraged this friend to leave her boyfriend, and she went back to him, and we were just floored. Like we literally spent like an entire day just kind of jaws open, shaking our heads going, how, why? And so that actually was the impetus to start this article. I was like, I can't take this. Like I need, and usually when I can't take something, I write about it. So that was kind of the inspiration that kind of opened the floodgate. So, I mean, the stuff in this article had been percolating in my mind and also in some of my work for years. But it was finally like this really screwed up situation, with a friend in my life that made me say, you know what? Fuck this. I need to write this down. Like, this is too much. And the article did spectacularly. It went crazy viral. I think it's been shared 400,000, 500,000 times on Facebook. It remains one of the most popular articles on the site. My favorite thing about this article, I think I'm probably responsible for hundreds of breakups, except I feel really good about it. I started receiving a lot of emails from people who said, I want to thank you. I just dumped my boyfriend or my girlfriend. I read your article, Love Is Not Enough, and it just made me realize, like, I don't want to be that person. So it's funny to, like, be proud of being responsible for that or playing a part in that. But it is a good thing. Like, I think it's a little bit destructive in our culture that breakups are just always assumed to be a bad thing. I think often breakups, not only are they necessary for both people, for both people's happiness, but also they can be a source of like very positive change and growth in people. And so while it's very painful, I don't necessarily always think it's a bad thing. And I guess one of the, like, kind of the side points of this article, or one of the implications of this article, is that, essentially. But I love this article. It's probably my favorite relationship article on the entire site. It's funny. It's worked its way into my own relationship. So sometimes when my wife and I are having a fight, or like discussing a problem that we have, sometimes it'll come up. Like one of us will say something and the other one's like, yeah, but you know, love's not enough. And we're like, yeah, okay. And it's great because it refocuses us back on like what's important to the problem. So it's like, yeah, we love each other, but we have a problem and we need to address it. So it's been a cool little addition to, I guess my relationship's tool belt. And yeah, it continues to be very popular and be one of the most popular posts on the site. Actually, and here's like a super, super, super sneak peek. I'm recording this in April of 2016, so my new book is not out yet. But there's already talks that if this book does very well, that I might do another book. And at least in my mind, so Subtle Art Not Giving a Fuck is coming out this year in September. It will be very much just about kind of like life decisions, happiness, and dealing with problems in general, like on a personal level. My idea is that if I do another book kind of in the same style, in the same vein, like kind of pursue the same path, it would be a relationship book. And at least right now in my head, is if I write a relationship book after this one, I would probably call it Love Is Not Enough. And the entire book would be about stuff like this. Basically this post, fuck yes or no, boundaries, attachment, toxic relationships. Basically kind of all the relationship stuff you see on the site. So there's like a sneak peek that doesn't even exist. Right now it's just kind of a brainstorm in my head, but there you go.